substitution, too many men on the field, Saskatchewan.
Gizmo has a block and the sideline. He has not stepped out. He may go all the way. He needs one block and he'll do it easily.
Promise Mess I wouldn't do this.
McDavid stops up. What a move. Shoots. Scores!
Hey, it's the Outsiders, powered by the McIntosh Group at RE/MAX River City. This is podcast 68. Lots of stuff to talk about. Bryn Griffiths and Robin Brownlee. Robin, how you doing?
Hey, I'm outstanding, Bryn. I'm ready to roll.
You know, we thought this is a big week. We need to track somebody down at the Ferraro Granato household. We got to get the biggest name we possibly can. And we had to settle for Ray. Ray's the guy who's chilling out this week. How you doing?
I'm good. Cammy's busy. I got nothing to do. I'm looking after the dog. Actually, I've got a schedule in there, color-coded, in the kitchen. I get the kids and the dog this week, and this is quite a responsibility. I'm wishing the kids all the best. Cammy's off to Seattle. Huge week, of course, the foundational week of the Seattle Kraken, and they've been working basically for 2 years identifying players, and those lists are changing, and they're looking at new players, and then of course this past weekend a couple of huge possibilities arose, and I can tell you I know as much as you do, so I'm looking forward to Wednesday as well.
Hey, before we get going down that road and also talking about your new gig, Robin, let's get to the big story of the day, the one that we just heard about this morning.
Well, you know, I thought we'd be leading with the expansion draft. I mean, that's the big story in the hockey world, but this morning, an Edmonton kid, a defenseman out of Edmonton, who plays for the Calgary Hitmen, third-round draft choice of the Nashville Predators, young man named Luke Prokop, came out and announced that he's gay, going into the National Hockey League, going on with his career. We were talking before, we've had expansion drafts in our lifetimes, but we've never had this happen with a young man going into the National Hockey League. I saw you commented on it on Twitter, Ray. Your thoughts about that announcement this morning?
Well, my first thing I'll say is, man, it was sure nice to wake up to an email of hope and good news and possibility and openness. There's so many times you wake up and the first story you see is something that weighs you down and something that, I don't know, just kind of takes a little bit of half a breath out of you. I read this story from Luke Prokop, first his statement, and then I read Pierre LeBrun's story on The Athletic, and I just like it in some ways, guys, it staggers me that it has to be such a big deal, yet I know what a big deal it is. I cannot believe the courage it took for him. Like, how would I know what he felt about that final step of telling his sister and then his mom and his brother and his dad and then his teammates and his agents and what he's encountered, of course, reading the story, is support and guidance. And then to Brian Burke and Brian through his son, Brendan, who passed away over a decade ago, the support that he got there. Look, I don't think it's possible for any of us to understand the change that Luke Prokop is bringing to the sport of hockey and to amateur sport and to professional sport. Because, as he said, look, he's sitting in the locker room wondering, if I come out and say I'm gay, how will that change things? It'll change some of the language that's used in there. It'll change the way people react to someone they find out is gay. Now, to those of us that are older, I don't know anybody that doesn't have a family member, a good friend, an acquaintance that is gay, and how it's changed all of our lives. I don't react and say things that I said when I was 18 years old. I don't. It just doesn't happen. But Luke Prokop is doing this at the front of his career. There's going to be a wake behind him of change. Like, I am so, like, how can you not be happy for this young man?
Yeah.
Like, just to, he can just, so now he can go where he wants and do what he wants and say what he wants and not worry that someone's going to say and whisper, oh yeah, that's the gay hockey player. Like, who cares? Good for him. This is a, it's brave and bold. And I think the hockey community will support him far greater than he could even imagine. There, as Brian Burke said, there'll always be some idiots online that are going to say stupid stuff and block them, mute them, ignore them, whatever. He's going to find this support behind him that he probably only hoped of, and now he's going to see it.
I think we'll leave it right there. I think you summed it up perfectly and beautifully. So thank you for that. And yeah, we look forward to watching his career blossom. I think it's going to be great to watch. And I'm with you. I'm very supportive. I know Robin is as well. Hey, you talked about some of the craziness that we've been reading online. The Edmonton Oilers, since we did our last podcast, went out and got Duncan Keith, and the Twitterverse just absolutely exploded. And it was right. It was really tough, at least for me, to watch Ken Holland, who I have the highest respect for. I know you do too, and Robin does as well. Yeah. To have to be subjected to some of the shit out there. This is a guy that's been around for a long time. GMs are usually 3 or 4 or 5 steps ahead of fans. But what was your take when you saw this? And now you've had a week to think about the Duncan Keith thing. How do you view it?
Well, from a couple of different ways. One, I think most people were upset. We're upset with the retention of the entire salary.
Right.
But they didn't want to lose Ethan Bear either. So if you retain salary, if Chicago retained salary, that likely moved the player from Caleb Jones to Ethan Bear. Now I wouldn't make that move. I happen to think Ethan Bear is a legit top 4 defenseman. And I think his growth will become very evident with more games behind him. Yeah, he had a tough playoff, man. The wheels came off, and like a lot of young defensemen, put it this way, he's not the first guy to fall into the ditch and go, man, yeah, how do I get my game back together? And then the season runs out and it's over and you can't get your game back. A summer away, a summer of strength, a summer of maturity. I'm not giving up Ethan Bear in that deal. I didn't want the Oilers to take the full salary from their cap perspective either. Now you can say, well, go get somebody else. I think this is important. There needs to be somebody with presence, swagger, and success in that locker room, because they have presence and individual success, but they don't have swagger and they don't have any championship pedigree. Now, Duncan Keith will come into camp, and I'm assuming he'll be the top conditioned athlete there. And that will erase a lot of, oh, can he play? Then he's going to have to play. Now, if he falls on his nose, which is possible, I guess, then you're going to say it was a terrible deal. But if you're looking at a player to play on your second pair, to kill penalties, to play 20 minutes a game, I think you've done just fine. I'm not saying Duncan Keith is Duncan Keith Stanley Cup caliber 2015. Like, who is the same as they were 6 years ago? Nobody. So I understand why Ken did this. I think there's a bigger puzzle to this. Now, Adam Larson might throw an overhand curveball into all of this too. And then you're going to have to chase with the money that you had for Larson. But it is not, you don't get to have the players you want to have all the time at the time you want them. So you do your best with the players that are available. I would have tried to push back as hard as I could to not take the full salary. My understanding is that's what Ken did. And he got into a brick wall, and they had decided this guy can play. This guy can make a difference, both on and off the ice. He can give us a little spine and a little backbone. And then if you have him playing behind Darnell Nurse, who turned into an absolute horse this past year, I think your left side's probably okay in your top 4. And I don't think you have to worry about it.
Ray, a word that gets used a lot out there, I think sometimes by people who don't really understand it, is intangibles. Now, first off, intangibles don't matter if you can't play anymore.
Then you're just a coach, Robin. Then you're just a coach.
If you can play, and Ken Holland thinks Duncan Keith can play in a second pairing role, reduced minutes, I think it does matter. Duncan Keith is not only still a really good player. While some people scoff at it, he's a really good man. He's a really good person. The way he conducts himself, his work rate, his conditioning regimen is ridiculous. And you look off the ice, the things he did in Chicago and even in the Okanagan in terms of charity, giving his time, to me that matters. You've been in the room. You're on the outside of it now. What's your take on the intangibles?
Well, intangible is always going to be, it's like, you know, it's that word up in the air and it means, but you can't define. I mean, we can always define it, but how do you really know if it's making a difference? I used Ethan Bear as an example just a few minutes ago, and I'll give you an example of an intangible. When a game or a series gets wonky, where it's gone sideways, if you have experience, backbone, courage, and you mix all that together, you might be the one rung that doesn't wobble. You might be something that can stabilize the game. If you had a stable defense, maybe when Bear went, you know, and got nervous and jittery and young, maybe Duncan Keith can be that player to help stabilize him or to take a few more minutes in that role to maybe help stabilize what became, you know, a whitewash that nobody thought was going to be there. Look, the intangible to a player, you can be, let me say it this way. You can be a good player, a veteran player, and you come in and out of the locker room, you do your thing, everybody notices, and that's it. But when Duncan Keith and players like him that walk into a locker room, there's a presence to them that is hard to explain. I played in New York. I played with some really great players in my career. When Brian Leetch walked into the locker room, it was different than when Mark Messier walked into the locker room. When Mess walked in, like everybody, eyes were on, like what was happening today. Leachy walked in, one of the most awesome guys I ever played with, walked over to a stall, sat down, put on his gear, went on the ice and was the best player. The difference, I wouldn't have been able to tell you the difference unless I was sitting there and I saw it. And it really matters. Now, here's something else I'll say about Duncan Keith. The Montreal Canadiens just went to the Stanley Cup final. I happen to think it was a little bit of lightning in a bottle and, you know, and one of those, boom, everything fit together. Is Duncan Keith as good as Joel Edmondson? Is he as good as Ben Chiarot? I think so. Those are their top two left-handed defensemen on the Stanley Cup finalists. Could he be as good as Alec Martinez in Vegas? Yep, you bet he can. Right? What about Braden McNabb? Yep. He's just older. Yeah. He's got longer hair. I think it does matter. I really do. And I don't know what the next year's gonna be like, but I have a feeling that the question from the public will be a motivating factor for Keith as well. To say, hey, look, I'm here still, I can still play. I can do this role, what they're asking me to do. And they're not going to ask him to play against the other team's top line. That's Darnell Nurse's problem now.
Right.
Not Duncan Keith's. Duncan Keith will be in a support role. And Darnell Nurse is like at the stage of his career where he's like, yeah, bring it on. I can take 25 minutes. I can take their best players. 2 years ago, I wouldn't have said that I thought that of Darnell Nurse. But I do now. And that's an evolution of a player that you don't get all the time. It doesn't just go in a straight line. Sometimes it goes, and skids around a bit. Well, he's in a place where if he has a bad year, the Oilers are going to have a bad year. Darnell Nurse is that important to their team. And I think Duncan Keith can support him in that role.
Hey, it's too much made of this, and I'm a big believer in this, actually. You know, everybody talks about Duncan Keith playing 27 minutes a game. If he plays 23 minutes a game, does that make him a better player?
Well, 27 is too much. 25 is too much. He's 36, 7 years old, right?
Right.
You're undefeated, champion of the world his father time. Wins every time. Mm-hmm. There are times when you run into a point in the game and you don't recover as quickly as you did. And when you don't recover as quickly, you make a mistake out of being just a little weary. Your legs are a smidge heavier than they were. You don't make the decision as sharply as you might have made before. Honestly, Brent, I look at 20 minutes, 20, 21 minutes, and I'm like, man, he can handle that.
Yeah.
Absolutely, he can handle that. And if Nurse is averaging 25, out of your left-handed defenseman, that's 46 minutes. So now you're looking for 14 minutes out of your other guys.
Right.
Well, I think it can be found.
Because I thought Ethan just ran out of gas. You know, you mentally tire in that playoff round. They were really scrambling. They went through a whole season without Klefbom, and now longer than that. But it just seemed like he was making mental errors because he'd been playing a little too much. And it's all balance, is it not?
Well, it is, but it's also not just the minutes. It's who you're playing against. If you're playing against the fourth line, the third and fourth line, you can make that mistake and it doesn't end up in a net.
Right.
So if you're playing Winnipeg and you make that mistake and it's on Nick Ehlers' stick, oops.
Yeah, trouble.
Right. In the net, right? So, but with all due respect, if it's on Nate Thompson's stick, you might be okay.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the, I think that, you know, analytics tell us that if we dive down into strength of opposition, but to view it just from a minutes played, can he handle more minutes? I think it's really important about the minutes that he plays against. And again, I think this speaks to what I believe Duncan Keith can do, is that the minutes he's going to be playing are not going to be the minutes he was playing in Chicago, both from number and quality of opponent.
Ray, I want to jump back into the expansion draft. I was looking back for fun. Plus, it's always fun to cheap shot you at the Atlanta Thrashers.
Oh, we were something.
There we go.
Now I tell you what, and you signed with them like August 9th, 1999. They did not get nearly the roster that the Seattle Kraken potentially will have. I mean, this was a 14-win team, as you're well aware.
Remember them all.
This is exciting in a lot of ways. I've always loved Seattle as a hockey town, being from Vancouver myself. Cammy being on the scouting staff is knee-deep in all that's going on. When you look at the pool of players that's out there now, and we heard about what's going on with Carey Price, is his knee bad? You know, there's all kinds of decisions to be made. The hair's going to be on fire down there this week. This is the Kraken have a chance to be an awful good hockey club, don't they?
They do. Look, I've known Ron Francis since 1984. And if you ask Ronnie what time it is, it's going to take him 20 seconds to tell you, because he's methodical. He's thoughtful. He takes information in and churns it really well. He's always been like that. Ron was our captain. He was 21 years old. He was 22. We were all 21. It felt like Ronnie was so much older than us, right? That's just the way he's been all the time. So there's all this information that's coming in. We're all focused in on the expansion draft itself. Mm-hmm. Well, on Wednesday, they can start talking to free agents as well. So the expansion process is only one part of this thing. Yeah. Then there's the free agency. And so, for example, out of Team A, there might be a pretty obvious choice. And you go, yeah, but we know we're going to sign this guy, this other guy, who makes this player from Team A a duplicate player and one that's not going to play for us. So we're going to take somebody else. People are going to lose their mind, I'm assuming, when the expansion list gets read. And they're going to say, why did they take this guy instead of that guy? Because they've been sitting in meetings for 2 years and building a strategy of what they hope to accomplish in this next week. So, you know, like I've seen rosters put out there and, you know, it's every high-priced guy and it gets to $80 million on the cap. Well, that's fabulous. That means you can't sign a free agent. Well, why are you going to do that? They're not going to do that. They're going to build room in to sign free agents. Do you want, like, I think people, you know, when they're talking about Carey Price, of course, Carey's just, you know, an enormous name that gets thrown into the soup. I think it's a brilliant move by Mark Bergevin, because if Seattle chooses to take him, he just gets $10.5 million in cap space. He doesn't have to pay an $11 million bonus due in September. I'm sure right. Jeff Molson would appreciate that. So if you're Seattle, it's not the $44 million. I shake my head when I say that. It's not the $44 million in real money that's the concern. It's the next 5 years that's chewing up $10.5 million of cap space. And can Carey Price play to some level near that? Because if you look at the last couple of years, this is my opinion only, he has been decidedly average in the regular season. And I think Carey Price is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think he's the goalie of our generation, of our last decade in the league. Everybody you talk to that plays, who's the best goalie? Carey Price. Doesn't matter what we think. The gas of guys that are playing, it's Carey Price. Look at his numbers, not in the playoffs, because last year was the bubble, was 2 weeks. This year was a longer run, but there was a couple of moments there that he didn't need to be anything more than average because the team had played so well and smothered their opposition. I think it's an enormous risk. I get why they would be interested, but I think it's a risk from a goalie that's had an injury history. He has a concussion history, and I myself, nervous of that. I would be more interested in exploring on Jonathan Quick for 2 years as opposed to Carey Price at five.
Yeah.
And it's not about anything other than the money and the years that would give me pause.
I have to ask you, because a couple of guys I was chatting with last week asked me this very question. So you have Cammy in this situation, and it's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be some pressure. But the question was asked, how would you like to be a fly on the wall at your household? Like, how have you guys managed? Have you been able to keep an arm's distance from this? Have you been grilled a little bit?
Not by my choice, Bryn.
Okay, yes.
Not my choice. I mean, I'd like to know. And Cammy has said, and she said, look, I can't tell you anything because I don't think it's fair to you.
Right.
Because what are you going to do with that information? You're going to want to tell somebody. It's really interesting stuff. So I don't know if it was 3 days ago or 4 days ago, whatever it was. She got a phone call from her boss, and she picked up the phone and walked out into the backyard, and she walked about 2 miles on the phone while they were talking.
Yeah.
And I didn't even have to ask what it was about because she wasn't going to tell me anyway.
Right.
Like in her office where her computers are, and like those are closed. Like it's when I walk in, she turns the computer. It's not for me to know. God, I'd love to know. I'd love to know what's going on. And when those players get announced on Wednesday, I'm going to find out. But it's not going to be before then.
Yeah.
Now, well, I mean, we could probably end this right now, eh, Brent? I mean, it's the only reason we asked to have Ray on today. But
was to get information, and I got none.
you do know Ron Francis, mm-hmm. and you can look at that hockey ops staff. And do you have any kind of idea based on what's available? And again, the protected lists are only one component. Do you have an idea in your mind what kind of hockey club Ron Francis and his staff is going to want to build?
Yeah, smart, fast, collect draft picks. I'll say monotonous, but a methodical approach. I do not see them blowing the doors off the cap right away. I don't see them. I mean, I could be totally wrong, but I don't see them selecting James Van Riemsdyk and trading for Vladimir Tarasenko and selecting Ryan Johansson. If you do that, then you're at what, $16, $24 million for three players.
Just like that.
Like that just doesn't really strike me as Ron's way. But I do think they have a real, if you look at the Carolina Hurricanes, they built a team there with not a lot of financial backing. Look at the number of draft picks that have been successful there. You know, they hired Robert Cron, who was Ron's director of amateur scouting in Carolina. And I would think you'd see the blueprint of what you see in Carolina. I think that is, I would be surprised if that's not a lot of his way. Now they're going to have more financial capital than he had in Carolina. For example, one of his draft picks at number 7 was soaking wet, 155 pounds, was Sebastian Aho. And he is smart.
Yeah.
And you know, he's a fantastic player. Now they got the number 2 pick in the draft. And, you know, I can't imagine that Owen Power's going to not be the first pick, right? Like, I think Power's, you know, is the first pick.
Right.
But then you get into, would you take William Eklund? Would you take Matty Beniers? Like, I think a smart, fast player jumps out at me at that pick. I'm really excited to see what what this is going to look like. But don't forget, here's one other thing to remember. Vegas drafted, I think, 12 defensemen. They drafted the max. And in the week following that, they traded 4 of them. So the picks that are going to come on Wednesday, start thinking about which one of those can be flipped for assets for something else. What if, again, Team A, the magical Team A, says draft that defenseman, trade him to us, we'll get you this guy. Yeah. Like, that's the stuff the picks themselves are interesting. That's the stuff I'm interested in.
The strategy part of it. You're right, absolutely right.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we got to talk about strategy on your part. When you came on our very first podcast, you gave us a great breakdown of transitioning from being a player to doing this hockey analyst thing, which you've done remarkably well, beyond remarkable in my estimation.
Thank you.
Now the question is, you're going from TSN to ESPN. Are you still going to do any TSN or nothing?
Yeah, so how this all worked was we had contact with ESPN. We tried to build a framework of what they were looking for from me.
Right.
And then I went to TSN and said, I would really like this opportunity. Because what I love doing more than anything is games. That, you know, can we build something together? And so for me, the two most important things that I do at TSN are the World Junior Tournament and the Leaf Regional Games. So we were able to work something out where I'll do somewhere between 20 and 25 Leaf games. It'll depend on the World Junior commitment. So I will continue to do the World Juniors, and then I'll do the Leaf Regionals. I will do about one game a week for ESPN until the playoffs, and then I'll do 4 rounds for ESPN. I will do the finals, which is awesome. I'm really excited to do that. But guys, what this was, aside from this opportunity to do the finals and to work again at ESPN, what this was really about for Cammy and I and our family. You know, we have boys that are now going to be 15 and 12. I've got my older boys, you know, Matt, who lives in Vancouver, and Landon, who's going back to Germany this next week. is to try to be more present at home. And when you're doing daily radio, people can't quite understand the commitment to that. And so I'll just break it down a little bit. So I'm on in Vancouver, Edmonton, Ottawa, Toronto, and used to be Winnipeg. I need to know with some certainty about what's going on in those five markets. The only way you know is to watch the games and then to talk to people. Like, most people view it as that's a 15 or 20 minute hit and then off you go. But when Jason Greger asks me about William Lagesson, I've got to have an idea about him.
Right.
I've got to have watched him play. So I'm watching game after game after game. Somebody's asking me to drive somewhere. You know, somebody's got a soccer practice. Cammy needs some help. And her job is getting more and more involved too. So while the travel will be the one thing we're going to have to dance around a little bit, when I'm home, I'm home. And that had enormous pull for me to the job. Now, it is really cool that I started at ESPN and now I'm back there. You know what? I was still playing and I started my career. I didn't even know it was a career. It was something to do while our teams didn't make the playoffs in Atlanta and LA. And I went to ESPN and I broadcast. And here I am. I've come the full circle right back to there.
Did you have any idea back in those first days with ESPN2 that you'd go on to be okay as a broadcaster?
You know what's weird, Robin? I never thought of it. I was doing it because the season was over. And then by the time my career was ending, this was really my thought, was that one day I would go into coaching. But I was just going through a divorce and my career was ending and my ex-wife was moving to Vancouver. And so my next move was going to be to Vancouver because our boys at the time were 13 and 10, Matt and Landon. And so I was going to Vancouver. Well, how am I going to coach when you know the nomadic life a coach leads? If you're any good, you move to the next spot. And then if you're any good there, you move to the next spot. Well, I wasn't leaving the kids. So Craig Simpson left broadcasting to go to the Oilers coaching staff.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden this job opened up. I get a call from, it was Sportsnet, and they said, hey, we'd like you to come in and audition for the Oilers color job with Kevin Quinn, who I had never met. I met him in the airport in Vancouver. We flew to Edmonton, did the audition on a monitor in the hallway at Rexall outside the old dressing room. It was, you know, where they parked the TV trucks?
Yeah.
It was just a monitor set up there. We were at a table. And I'm like, oh, I guess this is how they do it. I mean, I had no idea. I'd never done a game before. Well, I'd done one. I'd done one game. And I did the audition, and I don't quite recall who the other fellas were that were auditioning. And they called a couple days later and said, do you want the job? And I'm like, sure. And then I'm like, wait a minute. That thing's in Edmonton, and I live in Vancouver. Can I fly back and forth? And they said, sure. And that became the start of my million miles at Air Canada.
Hey, somebody sent me a text or an email message and said, when we said that we were having you on, this would have been last Friday, said, can you get Ray to maybe tell us an interesting story about some of the play-by-play guys he's worked with? Now, as far as I'm concerned, you've worked with two great ones. You're working with Gord Miller on a great event. It's a holiday tradition. And you get to work with Chris Cuthbert, who we all absolutely love and know so well. Yeah. Are there two stories about those two guys that still make you laugh now? Because Gord's a crazy guy is Chris, quietly.
I will say, I think they're two of the very best that broadcast the game worldwide. I think both Gord and Chris are amazing broadcasters who do it a little differently. You know, their styles are a little different. But one of the great things for me was that when I go to a game, I never wonder about whether my play-by-play guy is ready to do the game.
Right.
Like I never wonder. Now, so Gord is the most meticulous. This is one way they're different. He's the most meticulous, organized person that I've ever been around. Like it is amazing how much, like, he jokes about, like, getting me from tournament to tournament and things like,
yeah,
like, he's not kidding. Like, but that's the way he is. Chris is 180 degrees from there. When I first started working with Chris, I'm like, how does he do this? Like, his charts are like, you know, his game charts, you can't read them. I know he can't read them. They're terrible. So once in a while, when you're upstairs, like the play-by-play guy's calling the game and the goal will go in and I can see it's deflected, but he can't, you know, like, because he's following the puck and all that. And so I just reach over and touch his sheet, you know, number 14, right? I can't tell you how many times I went to reach over to Chris's sheet and I can't even tell which team is which.
Or where 14 is. Go,
I don't even know. Not even 14. What team?
Yeah.
So there was a time. So Gord is so ultra organized. We were coming back from a game in Philadelphia. It was a playoff game. And there's two ways to get back to the high or to the hotel. You can go on the highway or you can go down the, you know, the local roads. And for the first, maybe and only time, I'm like, don't go on the highway. He went on the highway. We almost missed the next game. I mean, this thing was backed up for miles. And I sat there and giggled just watching him having to acknowledge that this knucklehead beside him actually made the right choice. So now you guys well know Darren Dreger as well.
Yes.
If something happens around you and Dregs happens to be there, it's not good. So we're in, because he will never let it go.
Right.
So we're in Copenhagen, and we go out after a game, and we're having something to eat, and a beverage or two, and these locals kind of latch on to us. I mean, we're there in suits. We're in a pub in Copenhagen, right? They're like, "Who are these guys?" So there's some people sitting around, and this one person keeps, because people are coming up to Gord. Gord knows everybody in international hockey. He really does. And they're coming up, "Hey Gord, how's it going?" And, you know, Gord introduces everybody around him. So this person, this guy says to him, "Gord, are you important?" Well, do you think Dreger can let that go? Never. Every time you see him now, you can't say, "Hi Gord," you got to go, "Gord," because that's how the person was saying it in his accent.
Yeah.
So I'm going to shift to Cuthbert last, because his way is, do you remember the old Mr. Magoo cartoon?
Oh yeah.
Yep.
So remember Mr. Magoo would walk and things would be falling just behind him and just to the side and nothing would hit him. If you're in the booth with Chris, he likes to have water and tea. But he can't have a top on either, because he takes a sip during the play, right? Like if he feels his throat getting dry, he takes a sip. Well, he also talks with his hands.
Yeah.
So it's one thing if he wants to knock water or tea on his own notes, but when he knocks them on yours, it's chaos. Like there's water, the stats guy's trying to save all the talk boxes because there's water all over the place. His notes, he writes them in Sharpie. They're smudged. You can't read them. It's spectacular chaos with Cuthbert. And it's so organized with Gord. It is a completely different broadcast experience. I love the guys. They're fantastic.
Ray, one last one for me. You mentioned it. Are you having fun doing the Ray and Dregs podcast? And will you keep doing it with this change to ESPN?
It has been a lot of fun. I mean, the most fun, of course, is the non-hockey stuff. like you just, you get into some sidebar thing that you're talking about that you don't even know how you got there. And it's, you know, it's really fun. I love the guests because, man, you find out some really cool stuff from people when you have them for 15 or 20 minutes. And it's really, really interesting. We will continue to do it. There will be a season 3 for sure. And as long as people like listening, we'll go at it. We tape at some funny hours. Like the other day, Victor Hedman was kind enough to come on with us, but he could only do it at 8:30 in the morning. Well, that's fine. He's in Tampa. It's 5:30 in Vancouver.
Right.
That's an early start to get the old cobwebs out of the coconut. But we got it done, and he was great.
Now, because you've been cutting out the radio because of your time constraints, we've been lucky enough to get you on at least twice a year, and we can't thank you enough for that, because for us, it's fun. And we always find out something new or different. And one of the things that Robin and I always talk about is we try to get one thing out of our guest that we never knew about. You know, that one thing, or somebody always says, right, I never knew that about Ray, or that he did this. But we can't thank you enough for your time, especially at this time of year when you're golfing. How is your golf game before we wrap things up?
Okay, I've played 40 times. Ooh, and you'd think it would be better than it is. I shoot between 78 and 82 almost every day. I get there a different way. Sometimes I start out and I'm one under after 6 and I shoot 78. Right. Sometimes I'm 4 over after 3 and I shoot 79. Like, you'd think one of these days I could throw a 75 up there. You'd think.
Yeah.
But this is honestly, guys, this is why I love golf so much, is because each day is so different than the previous one. It doesn't matter who you play with, as long as they're a good guy. Like, you just want somebody to have some conversation with, have a few laughs. And I compete against myself every day. And it's the most competitive thing I do. And so I try to, like, I think I'm going to shoot 74 every day. And I'm disappointed every day when I don't. And then I go back the next time and try to shoot 74 again.
Do you watch the Open Championship this weekend? Do you have time for that?
Oh, you betcha. The Open Championship's the best because it's on at 6 in the morning.
Yes.
When I'm up anyway, and it's done without killing your whole day. If they are golf fans and they've not seen interviews with Colin Morikawa, go find them.
Yeah.
What a thoughtful, good kid he seems to be. And the way that he plays, of course, speaks to itself. But I saw him a couple of times, an interview with his girlfriend, Kat. These are outstanding young people. And I'm a big fan. I'm also a Jordan Spieth fan. I love the way he plays. I like his emotion. I like when him and Michael go back and forth, his caddy at each other a little bit. And I found myself cheering for them both, which is kind of a rotten way to cheer. I wanted Morikawa to make a bogey so it could get closer.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, but he was just too good.
I have to ask you this. I had the privilege back in 2005, about 3 weeks before the Open Championship played at St. Andrews, to play the Old Course. And anybody who's a golfer, I'm sure you've had a chance to go over to Scotland and Ireland, yep, Wales and England, wherever, to see where the game originated from. Have you had those experiences?
Yes, I've been twice. I'm going next year again. And, played at Royal County Down, which is constantly rated in the top 5 in the world. It's so hard. It's so hard. And the wind blows and the rain comes. And one day we played, we were at a beautiful course called Port Stewart. And it's right by Port Rush, and where they had the Open last year. And I put on my rain jacket and took it off 11 times in one round.
Yeah.
And the caddy would say, you got about 5 minutes. And you'd look, and like in 4.5 minutes, it would be pouring. Right. And he did say, this is my favorite line a caddy has ever said to me on a golf course. I was having a day where it was not very smooth. He was spending a lot of time finding my ball. So I hit this drive. I'm in the middle of the fairway, which was a rarity. And I'm looking at my shot, and he says to me, "What club are you planning on hitting poorly this time?" And I just about fell over. I'm like, "Hey, screw you, pal. Give me the 7-iron."
Well, it was awesome. At St. Andrews, I was given one of the older caddies, and he actually was intimidating the living shit out of me because he, under this very gorse bush back in the 54 opening, there was a story about every place I was.
Everything, yeah.
And all it did was intimidate me. But man, it's so special if you love golf to be able to get to those places where the game started, especially if you're a traditionalist or somebody who loves the history, like I know you
do. And it's just so different. It's so different. And, you know, we're really, as I hope we're aware here, we live a pretty good life over here in North America. And, you know, if we get a bad bounce on a golf course, for example, you're like, look at that bounce. Over there, it's all good bounces and bad bounces.
Yeah.
You can hit a ball right down the middle and it hits the wrong side of a mound and ends up in a bunker 40 yards away. At Royal County Down, I had that happen. And the caddy said, "Hey, mate, they built this course 300 years ago with a rake and a shovel. They probably got here and said that rock is too big. We'll leave it here." And my ball ended up in this bunker, like in the next county. I didn't even know how it got there.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the experience of being over there. I can't wait to go again. It's some of the best things that I've had to do or had the opportunity to do is to go play and walk around in Ireland and Scotland. And I look forward to it again.
Robin, are we done with this guy? Because he's given us so much time in the past. We can't thank you enough, Ray.
No problem, guys.
It's been a blast.
Yeah, I think we're done. We're not going to get anything out of him.
No, he's not going to talk very much today.
I'm a closed book.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy your week. Enjoy your rounds of golf. And we look forward to seeing you both on TSN on ESPN coming up in the fall.
Thanks, guys. I hope you guys have a great summer. I hope yourselves and your families are all good and people are enjoying a little bit of freedom, but still being mindful of where we all are.
Yeah, we're slowly working our way toward the month of August. That means it's starting to slow up a little bit on the real estate market, but it's still a great time. If you're considering maybe selling your home or maybe buying a new home, maybe, you know, kind of jumping up a little bit because your current household is a little on the small side, get a hold of the team at the McIntosh Group at RE/MAX River City because they can help you out with that. All you have to do is give them a shout at 780-464-0075 or macintoshgroup.ca. Get the process going with a complimentary evaluation of your current home. No obligation or deadline for this offer, but don't let the market pass you by. And like I said, there are some positives about the market slowing down a little bit. One is they'll be able to give you a little bit more time and explain to you exactly what's going on in the Edmonton metro market area. So give them a shout. Once again, the phone number is 780-464-0075, or you can find them at macintoshgroup.ca. Say hi to Brent for us, too. Love them. The entire team, they do great work. And also, when you're chatting with them, make sure you tell them The Outsider sent you. Well, there we go, Robin. That's podcast number 68 of The Outsiders, obviously powered by the McIntosh Group at RE/MAX River City. Your thoughts on Ray Ferraro, as always, pretty solid.
Well, I tell you what, you can pretty much go wherever you want to go with Ray. And we did today. He's got opinions, almost always learned opinions on anything you want to talk about. And that's what we got out of him today. The whole expansion draft is going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of debate. There's going to be a lot of moves beyond picking names off a list.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's must see, must watch, must listen for all hockey fans this week, because I look at the players available. I don't know if they can pull a Vegas, but Ron Francis and his staff look like they've got a real good chance to put together an awful good hockey club.
In fairness, too, you take a look at the Pacific Division. You've got Vancouver, Edmonton, and Calgary, obviously up here north of the border. Well, the Oilers are going to be strong. I'm guessing Calgary will not get off to as sluggish a start as they did. Vancouver will not have as many injuries, so those three teams will be competing for a playoff spot. Then you take a look at the California teams. San Jose seems like they're in a bit of a little bit of a rebuild, if it's fair for me to say it like that. I don't know what's going on with the Kings or the Ducks right now. And there's an opportunity here for Seattle to shoot for a playoff spot if they do this right, and I'm guessing they will.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ray talked about it with Ron Francis. He talked about him being methodical. You know, what do we need? Who's out there? And again, it goes well beyond who you get off the lists of players who were made available. What do they do with a Tarasenko? What do they do with some of the, you know, is he worth a gamble at that price point? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think so, not with three shoulder surgeries since 2018. Makes me nervous at $7.5 million a year.
Yes.
What happens with Carey? What happens with Carey Price? I mean, I don't think the Canadians are fudging things here, because I would assume there are doctors' reports and medical documents showing that he may be having some knee problems that could require surgery. Sounds, the timeliness of it makes you go,
Yeah.
But it's not that easy to fudge with a significant player like that. And do they even want him at that price point and that age? So we're going to find out in the next few days about the expansion draft list, but also the trades to come after that and free agency. So there's a lot of hockey left this summer.
What do you think is going to happen with Edmonton and Calgary here? Obviously, Mark Giordano is left unprotected by the Flames. So if they were to take Gio, then that's it. The Flames don't have to worry about losing anybody. But the Edmonton Oilers are in a little different situation, unless Seattle went crazy and went out and signed Adam Larson. Now, the problem with this particular podcast for you and I is it could be really dated by the time we get to Wednesday, but who cares? This is all part of the fun. But you've got Kara, Cahoon, Benson. What do you see the Oilers losing out of this?
Well, and we were talking about this before we came on, Bryn. Contrary to, and Frank Saravalli of TSN is on top of everything. I tell you what. He's saying, well, maybe it's less than likely that Larson comes back at this point, and that Tyson Berry could actually be the guy that comes back. Well, if you want to go, holy cow, that would be a big swing in what everybody thought was Ken Holland's plans even 3 or 4 days ago. You can't get much bigger than that. I'm of the mind, no sources here. I'm not going to bullshit anybody. My feeling, based on observation and the old gut, says I think Larson's going to be back. I'm not impugning Frank's sources here, but my feeling is he's going to be back, because if he's not, that right side is a real question mark for me. And I also find it hard to believe that Tyson Berry would take a value contract at 3.75 with the Oilers and lead NHL defenseman in scoring and not take that to market and say, pay me. I mean, could it happen? Sure. But, you know, there's still, like I say, there's still a lot of hockey in terms of transactions to go. So
oh, yeah.
as far as who the Oilers lose, I think they might lose Jujhar Kara or Tyler Benson. To me, those are the most obvious. We know what Jujhar is. He's a bottom six forward. He can play in the league.
Yes.
We don't know what Benson is yet, but I think the scouts would tell you potentially he has a higher top end. So do they go, well, we don't want Jujar because he's going to be a third or fourth liner. We're getting 30 picks off the list. We don't have to hit on every one of them. Let's take a chance that this Benson guy is one step from being the offensive talent he's always been. So one of those two, I think a lot of people would say the same.
Frank Cervelli is reporting that there's been some interest in Zach Kassian around the league and that he could be traded on Thursday once the roster freeze is limited. Mm-hmm. Would that surprise you? Wouldn't surprise me.
No, I haven't much liked the way Kassian has played, but what I've liked even less than that is the AAV on his contract for what he gets. Yeah. Zach Kassian at his best, and we've seen him make a difference, is worth that money. But he hasn't been that worth that money since he signed that deal. And that's the bottom line. So can you get somebody else who can handle, who can skate, can play an aggressive game, and maybe get you 10 to 12 goals a year?
There's guys there.
Kind of dough? I think you probably can. So if there's a, as you said, Bryn, we are not going to think of anything that Ken Holland hasn't already thought of
weeks ago.
If there's a deal to be made, Kassian could well be on the move.
One of the things that I hate it when I see guys with talent who are big who don't play big, and I like Jujar Kara very much, but I think he's a little slow and he doesn't play big every game. And with Zach lately, who I like and personally I know is really beloved in the locker room, he just hasn't played as aggressive enough. We've talked about this, and we talked about it after the Winnipeg series, about how the bottom two lines needed to contribute more for the Edmonton Oilers to give the top two lines a little more space. If you're not scared of the bottom two lines, the top two lines are really easy to check. And for me, the real story on the Edmonton Oilers is going to be, what do they do with the bottom six forwards? And and goaltending, all of a sudden, Mike Smith's not necessarily a done deal in terms of signing off on a contract as we tape this today. This is going to be an interesting 2 weeks ahead.
Absolutely. Well, and if we had all the answers, or we could have squeezed some of them out of Ray, we'd be offering them up right now. But like everybody out there, there's a lot of things we're going to have to wait and see on.
I took a lot of flack because I made a comment about the fact that everybody was so down on the Duncan Keith thing with the retention of the salary and what's that going to do to the salary cap when you have no idea what Ken Holland's got in his back pocket. And most times, well, I can tell you this from working for the Edmonton Oilers for 5 years. When you take a look at the big board and they're making a trade, they're already thinking about three or four moves ahead based on that trade. So fans just tend to look at what's happening right in front of them. But quite often, teams are way ahead of us on a lot of things. And this is the only time when it's a bit of a wild card because there's tremors and strange things can happen. Strange contracts can suddenly pop up. It's a real game changer. But it's what makes – this is part of the fun of watching hockey, not just watching what happens on the ice, but what's happening away from the game. Or is that fun for you?
No, I think it's a lot of fun. Look. Part of the fun of being for all the fans out there, is being an armchair GM.
Oh, yeah.
But the only GM that matters is Ken Holland and whoever he's talking to on the other end of the phone. So, yeah, the speculation's fun. You know, Oiler fans tend to lose their shit sometimes way too early, at the drop of. I'm telling you, it's true. I've seen it happen a time or two. But you know what? That's part. Hey, better that than indifference. The last thing you want as a hockey club is people going whatever. And that's certainly not the case here.
Hey, and one last thing about the Seattle Kraken as we go into a big week for them is you know, we've talked with Todd in Seattle, and we've talked to a lot of other. We talked to Cammy and. We've talked to friends of ours who are either living there or are sports people there. The town's really jacked up, and I love it. I think that's great. I'm excited to watch how Seattle rolls through the next week and a half to 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, growing up in Vancouver, I had an aunt who lived in Seattle. We'd go see the old Seattle Totems play. And in Vancouver, before the Canucks went to the NHL, you remember Guile Fielder?
Yes.
With Seattle?
Yes.
What a terrific, in the old Western Hockey League, you had the Portland Buckaroos and the Vancouver Canucks and Seattle. It's a hockey town, and they're creating a buzz there. And the nice thing too, Bryn, for the hockey clubs is it's going to create some rivalries geographically. And fans say if they want to go on a roadie, they've now filled the gap between Vancouver and having to drive way south to get to another National Hockey League club. So that part of it's fun too.
I look forward to the schedule being released real quickly here too, to see when the Oilers and when the Flames will be playing their first games in Seattle. The real games, not the exhibition games, which I think the Oilers are playing the Kraken in Everett, if I'm not mistaken, a preseason matchup. So there you have it. And the Kraken will be playing in Alberta as well. Okay. You can email us at theoutsiders@shaw.ca. Simple, huh? Theoutsiders@shaw.ca. You can also check us out on Twitter. The handle's really simple. I don't think it could be any simpler than this one. @Outsiders2020. And make sure you tell your friends to subscribe to our RSS feed on any of your favorite ear candy sites like Apple, Google, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Deezer, etc. And we're also on YouTube. Now, don't panic. You don't have to look at us. You can hear us on YouTube. There may come a time in the near future where you'll actually be able to see us, but if that scares the living crap out of you, don't worry about it. You can listen to us on YouTube as well. And also, your support is greatly appreciated. We'd be thrilled to talk to any potential advertising partners. As I said and have been saying for the last few weeks, we're starting to work on some free feature items, and I've talked to a few people about maybe coming on board to sponsor some of those feature things. I think it'll be kind of fun. We'll continue to talk through the summer. We'll be ready to go by the time we hit September, but we're going to get bigger and better with your support. So make sure you tell your buddies, make sure you retweet. This is a huge one for us. Make sure you retweet when we say we got a new podcast out. Send it to your friends, retweet it out, because that's how we get our message out. Robin, that's it for today. Sit back, fasten your safety belts, and enjoy the week, okay?
I shall, man.
Fun storming the castle.